From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 448, Troubleshooting Windows 10 with guest Mike Halsey, recorded Saturday, November 14th, 2015. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Mike Halsey, who's a Microsoft MVP awardee and the author of more than a dozen books on Microsoft Windows, including Troubleshooting Windows 7, Troubleshoot and Optimize Windows 8, and the forthcoming Windows 10 Troubleshooting. He is also the author of Beginning Windows 10 and Apress's new Windows and Windows Server Troubleshooting book series. I see a theme in these book titles, Mike, somewhere in here.
But it's a bit of a giveaway, really. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a giveaway. I mean, they're all about Windows.
Yes, that's clearly what it is. Absolutely. So, a bit of a problem solver, are we?
It's a role I just sort of fell into, sort of accidentally, really.
Yeah.
I'd been doing IT support for Siemens for various blue chip companies for. Mm-hmm. For several years, and I was talking people through problems over a help desk, trying to make sure that not only could we fix it so we didn't have to send out an engineer, but also that they would learn what the cause of the problem was and how to fix it themselves if it recurred.
Right.
In order to reduce costs.
Yeah, the best kind of tech support is the guy who teaches them how not to call tech support again.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the ultimate aim, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that happened at a time when I'd written, Vista had come out.
Mm.
And I'd written this 68-page guide to Windows Vista, my Windows Vista power users guide, I called it, basically to keep friends and family quiet because they kept phoning me when I was out with friends each time with questions that would only last a minute in inverted commas.
Right.
My mother of all people submitted the guide to, on the forums of Windows Vista, the official magazine, and the new media editor there, reviewed it and said, and was very, very praiseworthy of it.
Mm-hmm.
So people were saying, oh, well, you can write a book. So I couldn't get a book deal because I hadn't proven myself.
Right.
So when Windows 7 came around, I wrote the same book again, but I did 160 pages this time and released it free online. And again, approached the publishers, but you know, they weren't interested. There was nothing there. And then one day out of the blue, I get an email from Microsoft Press saying, we want a troubleshooting book. Do you want to write it? So I, needless to say, I snapped my hand off.
Yeah.
And because of the experience I'd had in the past, it was a very pleasant experience to write. Lots of people think that it's extremely difficult and very impenetrable to write a book. But if you know your subject, then, it doesn't need to be that difficult. And it just sort of grew from there. And I'm now, you know, I've written, I don't know what, five or six, troubleshooting books. I'm series editor with Apress on their Windows and Windows Server troubleshooting books now. And we're pushing ahead and expanding the range. We've got our first Windows Server books, coming out next year. Group policy. We've got a troubleshooting Windows Server with PowerShell coming out. That's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, this is the interesting part about the whole troubleshooting equation is the tools keep shifting around. There's more and more ways to look at how your Windows machine is breaking down or upset in one form or another. This is not just diagnosing blue screens anymore.
Yeah, the irony is that as Windows has become more stable over and more resilient and more robust over the years, Microsoft have included more tools
right.
to fix it when it goes wrong. and it's really ironic. The other ironic thing is before I wrote Troubleshooting Windows 7, there had not been, as far as I could tell, a single Windows troubleshooting book released by any of the main publishers.
From back in the time when we actually needed to troubleshoot problems with Windows.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's what, you know, how? Especially, you know, let's jump back to, you know, Windows ME.
Yeah. I try not to talk about that version of Windows.
Yeah. And, you know, Windows XP was, you know, it's lovely, but, you know, how many times do people have to reinstall it?
Well, people have fond memories of it, but they only have fond memories of it after SP2. You know, it had a bumpy gestation. We just forgot.
Yeah.
You remember trying to bring USB drivers into XP? That was really difficult.
Yeah, I had a really interesting conversation last year, around this time last year, with someone on the Windows product team at Microsoft. And we were talking about the launch of Windows 10 and, you know, the development of that. And I said, well, Windows 10 is going to be successful because it's got a key feature that Windows XP had and that Windows 7 had, and your two most popular operating systems that none of the other operating systems, all the less popular ones, had at all. And he went, what was that? And I went, it's blue. And he said, we genuinely never thought of that.
Whenever you make it blue, good things happen.
Yeah. It'll be popular because it's blue.
Okay. I don't think that's a good metric, Mike, but you can't argue with your reasoning. It's the same reason it says, gee, this desk is heavy and gold is heavy. This desk must be made of gold.
Well, yeah, so there is that. I think that's why Microsoft aren't actually using it as a metric for their accounting procedures. But
I guess there's a couple of things here. It's on the one hand, there's what goes wrong in Win 10. I mean, it's so new. And then what are the approaches to diagnostics that make sense? So what kind of problems are you seeing out in the wild with Win 10?
There are various problems that people have encountered with Windows 10. I mean, if you go back to when it was released at the end of July, of the most obvious and the most widely known problems were the fact that people couldn't get it downloaded and installed at all.
Right.
So, I mean, we can put that down to problems such as driver incompatibilities, of which I'm sure there are many. Yeah. Microsoft, you know, it's free for a year. Microsoft have presumably done this to give hardware manufacturers plenty of time to update their drivers. It will be a little concerning if at the end of that year there is hardware out there for which updated drivers haven't become available. Mm-hmm. And the question will be, what happens then? Will Microsoft have to intervene and write compatible drivers themselves?
Which they've done before, right? The WHS line of drivers was exactly that.
Yeah, they've done it before. But if you look at the way Microsoft is now structured, Satya Nadella's been really trying to trim the tree and save money and reduce overall costs. The new Windows Update system is a good example of this. Yeah. People think there's been a lot of people talking about forcibly getting Windows updates, saying that, oh, well, you know, Microsoft is, you know, this is what it's down to when you have Windows as a service. But my view is that it's just as likely that it's because the cost and the manpower required in supporting so many different operating systems and at so many stages, because people could hide updates, was just becoming too much for the company.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to think in terms of what it costs to provide tech support and just realizing the fewer versions of something you have, the better off they are. This is something I think Apple has nailed. You pretty much cannot avoid an update to iOS. You know, and that side effect is the platform's super easy to maintain because it's just not a lot of variation there.
Yeah, we're not used to this now in Windows, but I think if you give it 3 or 4 years, people will be so used by then to just getting these automatic updates on iOS and Android and for their apps. If you're using apps on whatever device it is, let's say you're using Netflix, for example. Mm-hmm. You don't know what version of that app you're using.
You don't care.
That you're always using the most recent one.
Yeah. I think Chrome did this so well, people forgot that they were even updating Chrome.
Yeah.
The driver thing is an interesting problem because if I'm a vendor, I'm more incented to sell new hardware than support old anyway, and as long as I can hold out as long as possible till that old hardware dies off of its own accord, you know, there's just not a lot of incentive to update drivers. It's a lousy business.
Yeah, this is why I think it'll be interesting, because you wonder if Microsoft's going to start putting pressure on these vendors.
I suspect they've put pressure on all along. It's just a question of whether it's effective in any way.
Yeah, and what there's going to be with consumer pushback towards these vendors as well, because there'll be plenty of consumers out there who want drivers, and you know what's going to be the result. I mean, I would imagine that the tech news sites, podcasts, perhaps such as your own, mm-hmm. and maybe even people within Microsoft saying, well, you know, these companies aren't helping; they're not cooperating and helping you get onto Windows 10.
Well, I remember, I think even back in the Vista timeframe, it was Dr. Watson, right? It was when Microsoft started publishing, here's where the most common errors are coming from. And they were video drivers again and again and again. That I think that must have put some heat on the vendors.
Yeah, I know, you know, drivers are a problem area.
Sure.
They're a problem area in Windows 10 at the moment. Because of the forced update, because it's drivers that tend to cause the most problems. Third party drivers.
Well, I guess this is a great place to start with the troubleshooting part. It's like, how do you know it's a driver causing the problem?
Well, the first question to ask yourself is, what's changed? Mm-hmm. What is it that's changed recently? If you've got a problem, then something has happened.
Right.
Either it's a case of the PC's been off for a while or the PC's been moved. Bearing in mind, older electronics don't like being moved anyway, because all the tiny little components expand and contract as they heat up and cool down again. You know, it's the old story about if you have a transistor radio that's been sat in the kitchen for the last 20 years, it will still work perfectly. But the moment you move house and move it, it'll break.
Right.
So what is it that's changed? Have you had a Windows update that's put drivers down? Have you manually installed something? Have you installed a driver? Have you installed a software package, for example? Has the PC been moved? What has happened? Has somebody else used it? And you can use, if you start with the what's changed question, then you can begin to narrow it down. If you're in a business environment, the next question I would ask is, okay, well, is this an isolated problem or is anybody else experiencing the same thing?
Right.
And that can dramatically help you narrow down the problem. I like to say that troubleshooting Windows PCs, or any operating system or any PC system really, akin to a Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Sure.
Because it is true that once you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be true. Must be the cause.
Yep.
So it's a process of elimination. I had a PC here on a yesterday, from a former boss of mine, a friend, who the PC had, you know, wasn't cooperating. She wasn't getting a picture on her monitor. And I had to go through the whole process of elimination. Is it the power supply? Is it the monitor? Is it the cables? And eventually, sadly, in this case, eventually narrowed it down to the fact that the motherboard had died.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's working through problems in a methodical way.
Now, a hardware problem is a very different creature, although admittedly, a driver failure and a hardware failure can both blue screen a machine.
It's much more likely to be a driver problem, though.
Yeah.
Hardware failures are, let's face it, not very common at all.
They're pretty rare these days.
Yeah, they're pretty rare. Hardware is very robust and resilient. It lasts for a great, you know, a huge amount of time these days.
Yeah.
There's a PC here sitting in the next room that's 7 years old and working absolutely flawlessly. you know, there's no problem with, you know, in 7 years, a few years ago, would have been unthinkable.
Yeah, it's ancient hardware, really.
Yeah, it would have died after five.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, the vast majority of the time, any problem is going to be a driver problem. So what are you going to do to deal with that? There's so many things that you can do. Let's say you do get a blue screen. If you get a blue screen, then you can enter the Windows 10 recovery environment. And I really do urge everybody to go into the control panel. Yes, the control panel. It's not in the settings app yet. On their Windows 10 PC and create a recovery drive.
Hmm.
Just a USB flash drive. If you've got one of 8 gigabytes or more, then you can include a system backup image on it as well. It's such a useful thing to have if there's a problem.
Wow.
Because you can do a full refresh on the PC if the hard drive packs up, but you can also use it to get into the recovery options if you have serious problems. Remember that Windows 10, just like Windows 8 before it, starts up so quickly that you don't have time anymore to press the F8 key on your keyboard.
It's really tough to get to F8 now.
Yeah, and you can't always count. If you have a serious problem, you can't always count on the two or three restart, and it goes into the recovery options thing.
Right.
So if you have a recovery drive, most people have got a spare USB flash drive sitting around. It's an incredibly useful thing to have. So you can go in there, you can do something as simple as a system restore.
Right. Just revert back.
Yeah, just to roll back the changes. If you discover that fixes the problem, then go into Windows Update, because I would imagine that this is probably where the driver has come from, unless mm-hmm. you've installed it manually. Look for updates, find the driver that's in there. And there is a tool available that you can search for online to hide updates in Windows 10. Microsoft have made this tool available.
How often do you think you should be refreshing that recovery key?
The recovery drive, you should just create once.
There's no reason to. I'm just worried that my recovery key is 6 months old. There's been a whole bunch of updates. I revert with it. And now I'm scouring through all these upcoming updates trying to figure out which one broke it.
Well, if you're just doing a system restore, you're only rolling back the last change that was made.
Oh, I see.
The most recent Windows update.
So it's still counting on the drive to revert back. It's not looking at the recovery key for the reversion.
Yeah, it's just, you know, system restore has existed all the way back, you know, when we were talking about Windows XP Service Pack 2.
Absolutely.
You know, that place where viruses used to hide until user account control came along.
Awesome. Mike, give me one second here to pay the bills, because Run As Radio is brought to you by ScriptRock, the fighters of configuration drift. Configuration drift happens in every environment from 5 nodes to 5,000. ScriptRock will find and scan the configs of every node in your environment, no matter the platform, and alert you to changes happening across machines. And now, with the latest updates, ScriptRock offers vulnerability scanning on all your nodes at no extra cost. Give it a try for 3 months free with the coupon code RUNASRADIO, all one word, at scriptrock.com/RUNASRADIO. So getting into this diagnostic process, I'd really appreciate the recovery keys. It's one of those things that everybody only thinks of after the drive has failed.
I know, and it's a shame that at the moment that hasn't been put into the settings app. I know that pretty much, you know, everything's going to move into the settings app eventually.
Right.
But it is crucial. It really is for everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, it's tricky when you get to scale if you're dealing with an enterprise. But for all of those individual machines around you, like I said, USB keys are cheap. Do you really need a key per machine, or is there some kind of strategy for sharing them?
It does need to be a key per machine with Windows 10. There's two reasons for this. Firstly, that you can in Windows 10 store your the full recovery image on the drive itself, and you can update this periodically. You can recreate the key if you want to, because the recovery image is always being updated. So that if you need to reset your PC, then the reset image updates itself to include all of the Windows updates that have come down up to 30 days prior to that date. And if you've been running your desktop for 30 days, then those updates are okay. That's why Microsoft have done it that way. The other reason is that you might have a 32-bit installation of Windows on, let's say, a low-end laptop or tablet.
Right.
And a 64-bit version on your desktop, or you might have an older PC with a traditional BIOS and another PC with UEFI firmware. And all of these are incompatible with one another.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, if you create a recovery drive on one, on a UEFI system, you can't use it on a BIOS system. If you create a 32-bit recovery drive, you can't then use it on to rescue a 64-bit PC.
It's been so long since I made a 32-bit machine, I didn't even consider that possibility.
Yeah, they're very different.
It's a long time ago. Any other tooling stuff that you, in your box, things you turn to when you're trying to figure out what's up with the machine?
There's so much information that you can actually get from Windows itself. Mm-hmm. Again, most of this is available in the control panel, but I mean, you can start, with the task manager. If in the processes tab in the task manager, there's plenty of information about what's going on, about live information. But you've also got the reliability monitor. You can search for this in the start menu. And what this does is it will present a graph showing the reliability of your installed copy of Windows over a period of time. And if you had an event on a day, such as there was a warning that something stopped working, or there was a critical event, such as a Windows service or a third-party service or an app crashed, then this will all be detailed. So you can just look back on previous days and you can click on any of the icons that are there and look through the errors and the problems. And then there's a link there to either get details about that problem or to get Windows to automatically check for a solution to that problem.
Yeah, I'm just looking at one of my Win10 machines here. It's a shiny new Surface Book, and I have a regular error occurring with the lock screen.
Right. Well, here's, you know, it's a really good way of getting information, the reliability monitor. It's a lot friendlier as well than the event viewer. You can go into the event viewer from administrative tools, but some people might find that a little impenetrable and a little difficult to use. Much of the same information is available in the reliability monitor.
I do like the reliability monitor, and it's been around for a while now, too. It's just this idea that Windows is watching its own behavior and letting you know when it's unhappy about something, that it saw that something went on. I just find that most of the time, the links it provides to more information doesn't provide much more information.
No, but that's where, if you've got the time and date, because it'll provide you with the time and date,
yep,
you can then open the event viewer. You know what type of error it is, you know if it's a critical error, if it's a warning. And if you look then at the appropriate category in the event viewer, you can find the time and date. And then by highlighting the error in the event viewer, then on many occasions, it'll present you with an error code, which is a 0x code. And then you can search online for that error to, find out what is causing that error.
Nice.
And you can commonly find fixes as well, either automatic fixes that Microsoft provide via their support website, which are little programs that you run, or other people will have encountered the same error. Remember, there's a billion Windows PCs out there. So other people will have encountered the same error, and they'll have posted, hopefully posted fixes on forums or the Microsoft Answers website.
So use the reliability monitor to filter the events for you. And then when you want to dig in deeper, go to the event monitor, use the date time to sort of get into the right zone of where those errors may have occurred. And I found searching on those 0x codes remarkably useful.
It is extremely useful. If you get a blue screen, then you don't get the 0x code anymore. Well, I now call it the blue unhappy emoticon of death. If you get one of those, you don't get the 0x code anymore, but you will get a text description of that error, and you can search for that, and that's just as good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the problem with the event system is that it is overwhelming amounts of data. It's very tough to tune that down into something you can manage.
It can be quite difficult to narrow it down. What I would say is, as I mentioned earlier, hardware problems are rare these days. Most problems, in fairness, most problems are caused either by badly written hardware drivers or badly written apps.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly hardware drivers. And this is why I would ask people what it is that's changed recently on the PC. what has been updated, what's been installed, what's been uninstalled, who else has been using the PC, what could they have done perfectly innocuously. Maybe they've updated something or installed it. I mean, if you go into the settings app and you go into Windows Update, then you can view the history in there and you can see what updates were installed and when they were installed.
Yeah, I do like the reliability monitor for that. You could see a stretch of no problems and then suddenly, hey, errors started happening here. I mean, one of the problems that you've got now with Windows 10 is it recovers from so many errors, you don't even really realize you had an error.
Yeah, it's really good at if you go back to the days of Windows XP, for example, graphics system crashes were really common.
It was a reboot of the machine every time.
Yeah, and when it came to Windows, when Windows Vista came along and they rewrote the hardware driver model, you would then begin to see little pop-up toast notifications down near the system tray saying display driver has stopped and was recovered.
Right.
And you will still very, very occasionally see that in Windows 10. But as you say, I mean, there's many occasions when it'll just fix something automatically on its own and you won't even know that it's done it.
Yeah, I'm looking at my log and going, I think my video driver might be grumpy here. Well, I mean, the poor Surface Book has got, I think it got 3 firmware updates in the first week.
That's to be expected.
Yeah, new hardware, new systems, you know, there's a price for being first. You get to be part of that debugging process.
Yeah, you've got a Surface Book and that's cool.
Yeah, Jeff, it was good fun to have the Surface Book at the MVP Summit, let me tell you.
Yes. I have the Dell XPS 13.
That's a beautiful machine too.
It's a beautiful display, but Dell do have driver problems with Windows 10. It's well known that there are problems with the Wi-Fi drivers. And what can I say? Driver problems are all too common.
Yep, all too common indeed. It's no question about it. So most of the time, that's going to be the issue. Certainly, there's some software that can be quite disruptive.
Yes, there is. This is actually why I wrote a software compatibility and hardware troubleshooting book. Mm-hmm. Just because there are so many of these problems, especially for people who are upgrading, migrating from Windows 7, especially Windows 8.1, kind of less of an issue. Making sure that all of the software and all of the hardware that you have is compatible, can sometimes be challenging, especially when you need to be working and you need to make sure that you continue working.
Right. Well, there's always this ongoing discussion amongst those that care and feed PCs about, should I be upgrading or should I be rebuilding?
I found that's kind of a mixed bag at this stage, and mm-hmm. it really does depend on what hardware you've got and who your PC manufacturer is, if you bought it, you know, if you didn't build it yourself. I've seen many PCs that just upgrade smoothly without any problems whatsoever. And I've also seen other PCs where I'll give you one example, a PC that I upgraded to Windows 10, and every 2 minutes after starting, it would crash. It would just hang, wouldn't do anything.
That is not a happy computer.
No, it's not a happy computer. It didn't even give me long enough to get into the event viewer and find out what was going on.
You've only got 2 minutes, quick!
Yeah, do it quickly. But when I formatted the drive and installed Windows 10 from scratch on that machine, again, making sure I had a backup image of that operating system first, just in case, it worked fine.
Hmm.
There were no problems.
You wonder what's different when that happens.
When you think about it, Windows 10's got something like, 10 million lines of code.
Sure.
Or 100 million lines of code. It's a hugely complicated thing. And when you put into that all of the limitless variations of software and hardware, it would be very difficult, if not impossible. I mean, it's amazing that Windows is actually as stable as it is, frankly. It's absolutely, if you think about the challenge that Microsoft have got, it's absolutely astonishing. But they do an extremely good job. But, sometimes things aren't going to go well. If you are going to upgrade, if you're thinking of upgrading to Windows 10, you haven't done it yet, I do urge you to create a system backup. You can do that from the backup and restore panel in Windows 7 or from file history in Windows 8, where you'll find a link to create a system image. And then at least if it all goes horribly wrong,
you can restore. Back to where you were.
Yeah, because there have been very, very few isolated cases of the rollback, the operating system rollback from Windows 7 to your previous operating system not working. And these are incredibly isolated, but you can guarantee that if you have a problem, then that's going to be one of yours.
Right. And it's just a good reflex for anybody doing serious troubleshooting. Before you change a thing, make a copy of where you are so you can always get back here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just good. It's good practice.
And USB keys make this a lot less painful than it used to be. You know, just having a handful of 16-gig USB keys so that you can snap a copy of something, blow and rebuild it, experiment for a while, and then go, oh, no, let's go back and go back again. It's just not as bad as it used to be. Burning DVDs of that stuff, that sucked.
If you think about what you can do from that USB flash drive, you can do a system restore to roll back bad Windows updates or a bad software install. You can do a reset on the PC so that you can keep your user accounts and your files, but you can refresh the operating system. You can completely reset the PC. You can do a clean install from that. You can do a system image restore from that if you've manually created one of these. You can go into the command prompt and you can run all manner of commands there if you know what the commands are that you need to do, such as moving partitions around and repairing partitions. And all this on a USB flash drive that's going to cost you about $5.
Yeah.
As opposed to an $80 or $250 repair bill.
Yep.
If you have to take the PC to a shop for somebody else to do it.
Yeah. Just spending a little time on it and knowing how many things you could fix and having that recovery key. I mean, that's not a bad little kit to keep your machines healthy on your own.
Yeah. But of course, the other thing with this is the same with the drivers that come with your PC. If you still get discs, if you still get discs with it, is keep these things somewhere safe.
Yeah.
Where you know, where you can get to them and you know where they are and they won't get lost.
Even when I get a disc, I have nowhere to put it. None of my machines have drives in them anymore.
Yeah. There is, I mean, I tend to use the cloud for those sorts
right.
of things.
That's where I want them.
Days.
And rarely do I ever want anything other than the latest driver.
Yeah. I always recommend if you're going to store drivers in the cloud, store them on OneDrive.
Right.
Don't store them in Dropbox or Google Drive or Live Drive or any of the others. Even though Dropbox and Google Drive are incredibly quick. I mean, they're mm-hmm. blisteringly fast. The one advantage that OneDrive has got is that it's when you start, let's say you have to reinstall.
Mm-hmm.
And you set up Dropbox or Google Drive, it has to download everything from scratch.
Right.
Whereas if you've already got a partition, a space on your hard disk that has these drivers, then OneDrive just picks up where it left off.
Nice.
So you can get things installed much more quickly. You haven't got to re-download everything. And bearing in mind, some of these files can be very large and some people can be on very low bandwidth, net broadband connections anyway.
Yep. So Mike, any other places we can get some resources to learn more about troubleshooting?
I would always recommend if people have problems, go and visit the Microsoft Answers website. There's, not only a great deal of expert help on there from fellow MVPs, and many other people, but it's also home to a lot of automatic fixes, little applets that you can download that will fix problems online. So I'd always recommend that's the first place people look.
Awesome. Great, great site.
Very useful.
Mike Halsey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.